welcome to the Soccer Coaching Podcast, brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly, reflecting our shared ambition to help coaches have the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. We hope you enjoyed this episode and thanks for listening. Ray, welcome back to the podcast. How are you doing?
Hi, Scott. Thanks very much for having me back on. It's been quite a while, quite a lot longer than I realised since I was last on. But yeah, thanks for having me.
It shows you that how busy we both must be, because I thought it was about a year or so ago. So
nearly that's 3 years. That's what we'll put it down to me. Yeah, busy.
Yeah, not old age and senility.
Exactly.
Well, thank you so much. As always, all the guests we get on are people that are like everyone in life, I guess, but particularly busy doing lots and lots of different things. So giving up a bit of your time to speak to us and share your thoughts and ideas around this topic is very much appreciated. And you are the perfect person for it. So no pressure, Ray, but you are.
We'll see what happens.
Look, we spoke very briefly before we hit the recall button, just about kind of bits and pieces, but I wanted the topic around kind of, what are the things that us as coaches really need to get a grip of and know a bit about, you know, what's that useful? And given all the work you do directly in the coaching roles, but also the stuff you do to support coach development, I just thought actually you're the great person to ask about maybe some of the topics you've covered or things people have asked about and stuff like that. So that's going to be the kind of the center of the conversation. That sounds okay?
Yeah, sounds good. I mean, this could go anywhere, which is useful in itself. So yeah, all good.
Love that. Yeah, brilliant. But look, before we do start, I'm going to guess 99% of people that listen to the podcast will definitely know you already. But for that 1% that don't, a bit about kind of your journey and what it is you've done historically, what it is you currently do and that kind of stuff, if that's all right.
I feel like I need, at this point in my life, I feel like I need a bit of a timeline visual to show people, you know, like they do.
Now you are showing your age.
So I've been around a little bit. So professionally, I spent quite a lot of time out of the UK in the last sort of decade or so. I spent some time back in Ireland and the League of Ireland and in Tanzania and Africa and in Bangladesh. Obviously all interrupted with COVID there for a period as well. I've worked in professional football or professional coaching for best part of 20 years, I suppose, heading towards now. Probably coached at every level of the game, from grassroots football through to academy football, senior professionals, so youth international players as well. So I kind of feel like I have a pretty broad spectrum of of players that I've worked with on the grass and been around teams and stuff like that. And I've done that kind of in multiple cultural settings as well. Of course, my books probably catapulted me into that environment as much as anything. Something I wanted to do a long time ago, when I first started wanting to coach, I realized I needed to separate myself somehow, given I didn't have a professional playing career. So I wanted to separate myself from, I guess, the pack of everyone else who wanted to get into coaching full time and make a career out of it. So Making the Ball role was released in 2014. And to say I went down multiple rabbit holes when I was writing that was an understatement. It's quite broad in the topics it covers, but it gave me a platform to almost validate myself and get me into conversations and things like that. And I probably wouldn't be talking to you without it. And then I always say writing books are a little bit like getting tattoos. I think when you get one, you always want the next one. You always, you know, it's never too far from your mind about, well, you know, what's next. Because of the process.
You're branded with it, right? You are, that's like part of you, right? It becomes part of who you are, that book. Even if things change for you, potentially, I'm not saying it will be Making the Ball Roll, which is a fantastic book, but it's going to always be associated with Ray Power, right?
Yeah, that's it. And there's no hiding from it now, I suppose. And do you know what's funny, Scott, is when I wrote Making the Ball Roll, I used the word validate a moment ago. And I think a lot of coaches feel like they need some sort of validation, whether no matter what level you're at. It's always nice to feel like you're doing. I think that's why coaches will go to the Guardiola sessions and the professional coaches. The Man City did this, or Barcelona, or Man United did that, to validate what they're doing as good solid work. So actually, when I was writing Making the Ball Roll, I probably took, I don't know if I should say this actually, but I probably took very few risks in terms of my opinion on stuff. It was more a presentation of this is what these clubs do, this is what this coach does, this is what this psychologist said, this is the theory of this sort of thing. Here's some examples. So it was kind of like, well, it's not me saying it,
It was safer, doesn't
Barcelona,
it?
it's Louis van Gaal saying it when he was there and this sort of stuff. So it was safer. But I suppose as that kind of validation happened, it allowed me to bring me to the surface. So, well, actually, I think this is how I work. This is what I do. This is what I offer. For example, in coach development, I'm not saying it's 100% everything, but it's my view on it, my take on it. And the thing is, with the Making the Ball Roll in particular, because you were kind of offering that balanced view of this club does X and this club does Y, it allowed me to kind of filter out my way, I suppose, in a sense. Not that that stays the same or, all the time, it does change. But yeah, that was a big part of what I've become and what I became known for. And it was reviewed well enough to be able to back it up with some other stuff and get into conversations I probably wouldn't have done without it.
And more recently, then, what have you been doing?
Yeah, so I came back to the UK in the summer. I was working in Asia, obviously not quite 1 million miles from home, but 10,000 miles or whatever it was from home. A job came up in the town where my wife is from and where our family had settled while I was abroad, here in Boston and Lincolnshire. And it had come up while I was on leave, out of Bangladesh. So it just kind of the stars lined up a little bit for me to come back, literally come back home, to my family and stuff like that. So I'm now head of football here at Boston, sort of looking after. We're a non-league club, so it's a little bit more complicated, I would say, than professional clubs. So probably have multiple hats on, but basically look after everything from our under-19s down, and that contains community coaches, community players, as well as selected players, academy players, hopefully future pro slash semi-pro players as well. So it is a busy time, but it's all good stuff. I don't like answering questions. How are you? Busy? I don't really like, because everyone can do it and does do it. So it's I'm fortunate enough to be busy doing stuff that I really like doing and get my teeth into. So yeah,
Fantastic.
it's been going well. And the books have there's always an idea floating around. But a lot of my time outside of the day job, so to speak, is probably a COVID legacy, really, where I sort of developed some coaching programs online and developing curricula, supporting coaches, mentoring and stuff like that. So probably actually after this recording, we'll do. I do have a one-to-one mentor with a coach in the States, for example. Yeah, I'm putting a lot of stuff together, mainly online. Through Zoom, through webinars, with guests, without guests, and all that, just to keep it rolling from COVID, because it was so enjoyable in a weird way during COVID. A lot of people had free time, and we all became experts on Zoom, and we were all able to jump in a room together all of a sudden and be able to do it. So that's continued, and it's, I guess, supply and demand kind of thing. There's always a demand for it. There's always a sitting group of those who want to jump on those programs, and yeah, we keep rolling through them.
Just back to the book, really, maybe even just more recently, like your last few years. 10 years since the book, and I've said before, I'm a massive fan of the book. It was probably the first book I read when I got into coaching that kind of made sense to me. It was like, right, that's what I think, that's how I feel, that's kind of how I think we should be doing stuff. And I think I said on the last podcast we did together that we encourage all our, we even buy it for our new coaches, but all our coaches at our club to get the book and have the book
Yeah,
and read through the
exactly.
book. So it's like the go-to guide for us. And it, for us, it hasn't like. it hasn't dated or changed. The messages still ring true, particularly, I think, when you're starting off in your journey. And that doesn't mean it's not relevant for coaches with a bit more experience, but certainly in those first few years. Looking back on it now, with, you know, with 10 years under your belt, do you think you got most of the messages right back then? Because I certainly do.
Yeah, probably. I mean, the Coaching Youth Football, which was the follow-up book to it, kind of became the book that it wasn't an update. It was all the what do they call it in the movie industry? The floor clippings or something like that? All the bits you left out. Or
the cuts.
Or the bits.
All the good stuff.
after it was published, I remember a couple of times after it was being published and reading an article on something, I can't remember exactly what, going, oh, I wish I had that in now.
Yeah.
You know, so it just kept more content just kept coming out. And look, I'm really humbled by making the ball roll. And sometimes I remember when it went live on Amazon kind of late one night in 2014, and having a real wobble because I'm out there now, I'm exposed. It's, you know what I mean? If anyone does read it, if it's pulled apart, I'm dying inside. And thankfully it wasn't, and is reviewed really well. Coaches new to coaching, like you mentioned there, get their value for it. But, you know, I've had phone calls from people, very experienced, very highly qualified coaches, that have got it and enjoyed it and all that sort of stuff. So you could probably, there's not too many, and I can't think of anything off the top of my head where I'd go, oh, I wish I'd tidied that up a bit, or I wish I'd, you know, done that a little bit differently. But yeah, I suppose to make it a little bit more current and stuff like that in terms of names and examples, Coaching Youth Football is a great follow up for that. But yeah, it was a great experience, and it does light a fire under you when you know that. I'm pretty confident that anyone who picks up that book will review it well.
Yeah,
and I don't mean that in a cocky way. It's just got to that point where the fear is gone, you know. And if someone does one starish for whatever reason, it doesn't hurt anymore. Do you know what I mean? It just gets lost.
You've written a few more since then, so I think you got the confidence of the first one, right?
Yeah,
so,
true.
And, it's gone well since then. What about you then personally, Ray? Like, you know, you've been in the game for a long time now, 20 odd years, you know, since we last spoke 2 or 3 years ago. Any kind of major moves or change in the way you see coaching or your thoughts about coaching personally? Have you, any enlightening moments and things that have changed for you, or has it just been like more of an evolution rather than a revolution?
Yeah, maybe an evolution. I think if you put together on the coaching courses, like task one tends to be, what is your philosophy? What kind of coach do you want to be? And while that should remain reasonably constant in the main, it does evolve. It has to, unless you do have those watershed moments where you go, well, actually, I get it now. You know, we talk a lot on our programs to coaches about the light bulb moments that you'll have from a book or from a video or from a webinar. And to kind of capture those, because they're probably the ones that are important to you. So for me, you know, if you said the last 3 years, so the last 3 years basically for me encapsulates unemployment as a coach, and as a coach that doesn't get a £10 million, you know, handshake when you leave a job. That unemployment point during COVID. Going to Bangladesh and living in an environment that was totally alien to me, and in a, obviously the language barriers and the lack of family and all that sort of stuff, and then actually coming back into the English game, which I've been out of for quite a long time as well, and the English non-league game as well. So it's there's been loads of bits and pieces that you pick up along the way, and you know, starting my new job here. As well as in Bangladesh, it's got to be culturally right, I guess. So what is, like, the club I'm at the moment, what does it look like now? What's the expectation? What's the drive? What's the DNA, I guess, of coaches, people, players around here? And at what point do you pitch it To try and move that forward, I guess. I know that might sound a little bit vague. Put it this way, when I took up a job in Ireland a few years ago, I tried to change too much too quickly and actually alienated other people. And that's just a self-reflecting thing I've done. So, any new environment I've been in, it's sort of like, give me some time just to figure out how this is all working. And then I'll give my penny's worth and we'll see how we move it forward and be the best it can be. Altogether, rather than pushing back against against people or cultures or norms that exist. So that's probably certainly a life lesson, as much as anything. But yeah, it's so important, because buy-in from whoever you're working with in whatever industry, buy-in. If you get that, if you get buy-in, I mean, that's probably number one on our list of,
yeah.
of, you know, if you can get buy-in from the people around you, the players, coaches around you, you're halfway there, because they'll carry it for you, they'll carry it with you.
It's a good message, Ray, because I think, especially as coaches, I know what everyone's like, we're so passionate and keen and you want to make a difference. And that difference is obviously going to negate or line up with change, right? But it's the pace of change is important, isn't it? And if you try and push too fast, too quickly, you're going to be counterproductive. Like if you do it too slow, might not get your message across. And actually there's a talent in the skill there, isn't it? Actually what pace you push for that change to happen and how you manage that so you don't alienate people and you don't do things in a way that kind of becomes counterproductive. But it's a bit of a craft, I guess.
Yeah, it is, and you probably don't realize how important it is until you have that probably rock bottom moment in it with it, in that sense where you kind of believe in what you do and how you do it and things you try to implement, but without the buy-in, you're stupid. You really are. So yeah, that was an important one for me. So if it was message one to the coaches that are listening. If you can get buy-in from the people around you, you can sell rather than tell. It's really, really invaluable, because, like I say, they'll carry it then for you, and they'll buy into what you're doing, and you can get on a real roll over time with it.
Yeah. Perfect. Look, it's in my head. I'm going to ask it now, but feel free not to answer the question if you don't want to, because it wasn't part of what we agreed we were going to talk about. But the fact that you're head of football there at Boston, I'm keen to know kind of how it works with the younger groups. I mean, did you go from under, what age group do you start? Do you have midweek sessions? Obviously, the pro academies, you seem to get the 3 minutes a week plus weekends. I'm going to guess it's a bit different maybe at Boston. Are you happy to paint a quick picture of how that might
work? Yeah, sure. It is different from your EPPP clubs here in England, for better or worse, in some respects. We're at a level in the food chain where our boys will go higher up, and we will also recruit players or lose players who end up going lower down. So I don't think, unless you are top of the pile, I think you've got to cut your cloth anyway, if that makes sense. So whether you're, I don't know, a Premier League club with a what's the right word, a modest academy, you've got a place in that food chain. So we're cut differently. We have full time players from 16, because we're not EPPP, we can actually have more than the usual sort of one squad of them. So we've been doing quite a lot of work recently on. In non-league, you go from under 16 to under 19 in one hit, which is really, really difficult. I think for a big bulk of sort of 16-year-olds finishing GCSEs to have to go play against basically young men who are driving and voting and all that sort of stuff and playing men's football. So we're heading away towards having a full-time 17s, more or less in 17s, 18s, and 19s, although all under 19, if that makes sense. And we want to create something that allows us to probably push more of them into the first team. So whether we create something after 19s is up in the air as well, but certainly on my radar. I guess you just want to give players the best chance to be the best version of themselves and have that staying power to be able to stay in it and not sort of fall off a cliff once they hit a certain age. Then we have our school boys. So we have a 13s to 16s academy. I know that that's a bit of a buzzword around football, but they're selected players who they come in a couple of times a week. They have the game at the weekend. We have what we call some added value around those guys, so they'll do their psychology stuff, their strength and conditioning, the classroom analysis stuff, all that kind of padding around the actual balls, bibs and cones stuff. And then actually our foundation phase is entirely football for all. So if you look at some of the models, this wasn't necessarily intentional or wasn't even my doing. It was like this when I came. It was a case of, well, the club is in a town. It represents the town. So having players who are free to go play grassroots football, a lot of them coached by their dad, good people, good local people, and that gives us a kind of a wider pyramid in terms of that structure. So that's they have a curriculum of their own, which is heavily ball mastery based. To get that sort of work in before sort of pre-puberty and all that. So it's different, but we certainly don't go select 7-year-old or 8-year-old players for any sort of selected team, which is probably a conversation in itself.
Yeah, you've got to be careful where we go with that one, haven't we?
Yeah, probably.
Another podcast. Brilliant. Well, thanks for sharing that, because it wasn't part of the plan, but I appreciate that. It's nice to hear, and it sounds great. What we do want to talk about, if that's okay, is kind of around the things that I guess is what coaches kind of need to know. And I say that in quotation marks, because, what we need to know is all different depending on what you're doing and where you are and stuff like that. But given, your experience in coaching, the different levels you've coached at, the different regions you've coached at, and I think in many ways, the wonderful CPD stuff that you do and have done over the last few years, that always kind of generate interesting topics and you look at things. You've been very close this particular over the last couple of years. So I'm just keen to get your thoughts on, not telling people what they should know, but what you think, would be important for coaches to know, particularly kind of grassroots youth foundation phase, kind of that space, or YDP kind of phase. And maybe it's unfair to give you like a number, like saying 5 or something, but maybe there's just a list of things actually on top of my head, Scott. I think, this would be quite important and the reason why. And it may be things that you come upon your CPD sessions that you've done for the webinars and the other bits. So it's a bit open, but is that okay to position it like
yeah,
that?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. I mean, the problem I find when you list up what are the 3, what are the 5 most important, this, that, and the other, it kind of becomes just an exclusive list. It just becomes, okay, I've done all those 5, I've nailed it, off you go. Yeah. So I'm not really one for them, and I kind of mistrust them when I read them. But I suppose the thing I go straight in with is, there's 2 sides of it. There's a football side of it and there's a person side of it. From a football point of view, the FA talk about ball rolling time, for example. 70 or 75% ball rolling time is the kind of recommended one. And if we tie that in with some of my sort of deliberate practice stuff, if we're talking exclusively balls, bibs and cones, sessions need to be maxed out in terms of the amount of time the ball is rolling. I'll give you an example. If you have a queue of, I don't know, let's say you have a queue of 15 players, waiting to have a shot at goal, the ball is rolling, but really only 1/15th of the time, if that makes sense, because obviously there's 14 sort of stood still. So I like coaches and I like my sessions to be dynamic. People aren't waiting, people aren't queuing. Players aren't disengaged physically or mentally, they're always doing something. So actually, and this is the difficult part in grassroots football and the fortunate part of the environment I work in, is that I'm 99% sure that when I go to my session today, there's going to be 18 players with 2 goalkeepers. It's very unlikely that you get a last minute kind of blip with that. So you can plan accordingly and make sure that whatever it is you're doing, you've got everyone in and involved and all that. That's really important for me. We all, even myself and yourself, Scott, when you fell in love with football, you fell in love with the ball itself. whether you were on your own with it in a living room or a back garden, or following it around on the telly, it was all that attracts us. You watch kids playing football in a seven-a-side game, for example, it drives coaches mad, but they get drawn to it, all of them, at the same time, and coaches pull their hair out. But when we kind of link that back to why, it is the centre of attention, it is the fun thing, it's the toy, it's the reason we all started playing. So I want players to be playing with the ball as much as possible. If they're not playing with the ball, what are they doing that kind of connects them to the game? Are they just in a queue? Are they waiting? Are they a server? Or are they a teammate, an opponent? Even a faraway teammate has to behave a certain way within a game or a training session. So I'll give you an example. If I don't know, Mo Salah is in the right corner of the pitch, Virgil van Dijk has part in the game, the holding midfield or whatever has a part in the game, even though they're not touching the ball. So I like sessions where kids with and without the ball are still engaged in what they're doing and have something to do.
Yeah,
that's the biggie for me.
Okay, what a great start. Okay, you got to build on from this, by the way, Race. Early, but well done.
No, it's downhill from here.
But do you think it's fair to say, I'm thinking about like coaches and how we support them around this, because I've definitely done this in the past, and maybe I still do it now, but I'll look back on a session and I think, oh, that was a good session. It was high intensity, good ball rolling time. But actually, when you then think further back and look at individual players there, it felt busy to me as the coach, because I'm obviously dealing with maybe 10, 15, 20 kids, and that there's always one live. But actually, if you look at some of the players, there was periods of time where they weren't doing very much. Was busy, and I was coached, so it felt busy to me. But on reflection, there's bits here where there's things not happening. And even now, when I watch a YouTube video, I'm trying to find something that relates to the theme I'm working on, I'll look at a little clip of a session. If the first 10 seconds I see maybe 8 bounce players on the outside and not involved, and this is probably wrong, but I don't look anymore. I can't watch anymore. I'm not having 8 boys out of the game for 15 seconds, because unless there's a reason for it, and it's maybe it's a way of practice where they need a chance to recharge. But do you think that's something we can make? Sometimes we oversee, especially maybe newer coaches,
Definitely. And look, we could make the same point, couldn't we? We could say that the ball is attracting our attention.
Exactly.
And I think we probably, amateur coaches or new coaches or whatever you want to call them, spectators, do the same. You on your maybe your B&A license and stuff, you talk about on the ball, around the ball, away from the ball. And your coaching sessions, I don't think, are any different, because you're absolutely right. If there's a 1v1 going on, next to your bazooka goals or whatever you've got, you will be busy, because you will be giving some instruction or some advice or some encouragement or whatever it might be. But again, there's only two doing it, and the rest of them are sort of loitering, waiting for their turn. So that's why that kind of definition about around ball rolling time, it's a nice concept for sure, and it's a nice way to tune people into the fact that, maybe I'll talk less, maybe I'll simple practices that don't need a lot of change of equipment and slick transitions from one thing to the other. But also, if we prorate it, that ball rolling time at a given moment, are the majority of players working, doing something active in the game? But you're absolutely right. You can feel busy in it, but maybe sometimes you've got to look around and away from where the main action is and just see, well, actually, is that happening?
Yeah. I tell you, there's still work to do. I still see sessions now, and I won't name names here, but I've 8-9 minute interventions that they'll play for 5 or 6 minutes, then their coach is talking for 8-9, sometimes up to 10 minutes, and they'll go and play another 5 minutes again. I struggle. I can talk a lot, don't get me wrong, but I think there's more pressure on the talking. Once they're playing, it's kind of easier to coach. The talking is the hardest part, right? It's it's about you, and you've got to do more with it. When they're playing, it's almost as easier to coach when they're doing something.
Yeah, I think so. And I think if you feel like you need an intervention like that, I think you need to do it somewhere else at a different time, with a video or with a tactics board or something to tie it all together, rather than being a kind of a ranty one. Because no one prepares a 9-minute intervention. That's clear. And maybe being a little bit more punchy, splitting that, not necessarily the time, but splitting the main points you want to get out, so it's chunked a little bit more,
yeah,
layer
it
or
up, chunk
layered,
it up,
yeah,
yeah.
exactly, scaffold it up and in some way. And because with all the best will in the world, maybe that particular coach, he's fully invested, or he or she, they're fully invested in those 9 minutes, and that's brilliant.
But the 10-year-olds aren't.
They're
That's
not.
your
They're
problem.
Not going to be. Yeah, and probably.
Yeah, you can see him at the back, kind of picking the black bits up on there. You see that it's the movement. It's the first minute, so they're all deadly silent and all there. And then, as an observer, you're watching. Suddenly, you just feel a bit more restlessness and a few more get
yeah,
up
for sure.
And stuff.
And Scott, I don't know if I should say this, but I've been in change rooms with good coaches, professional coaches, who've just gone off on whatever tangent they're on, and if it's just verbally, it ends up meandering somewhere, and half the time, like, I've worked with the guy and I don't know what he's on about anymore. Do you know
Yeah.
what I mean? There's no
Yeah.
way everyone nodding their head and saying yes knows as well.
And that's adults, right? That's not even
yeah,
youngsters that are.
yeah, correct. And we probably had a chat beforehand, and we kind of felt like we knew where each other was going to come from or whatever. And you still get lost in it because it just becomes a little bit ranty and a little bit, it's not held up with anything. There's no foundation to it.
Okay. So what was that? Number one, maximize your session time, right, by keeping high engagement, keeping players involved, and look at individual, not as a collective, really, as a coach. That would be a good source of kind of investing, how you might go about that.
Yeah,
How,
I mean, we say physically and cognitively engaged, and that cognitive word is probably not a great one, but physically and mentally engaged,
yeah.
in what they're doing. It's great because not only is it good football-wise and development-wise, it's good for discipline. It's good for behavior management. You know what I mean? Because almost like there's no time to muck around. There's no time to misbehave. It's probably those cues and them boring minutes that lend themselves to kids finding something else to entertain themselves with that mightn't work for you.
Definitely.
So that's probably one of them. That's certainly my go-to. If a coach comes to me and say my team's, it's always me. And I'm talking about the culture of misbehavior or something like that through it. Say, well, get them busier. Let's see if you can scaffold it up to them being busier in the sessions. And
okay.
Yeah, maybe there's less moments for that. Yeah.
All right. Now you've got to find number two now, right? Because we have a list of
Do
one.
I?
We've got at least
Was
two on
it?
This list. so
yeah,
thinking back about your CPD sessions, I mean, what other things have you covered there? And what particular things have you actually, do you know what? That's something that I'm glad I did that because, that definitely was something that the people come and got something
yeah,
out of.
My goodness. I mean, we've covered.
Done a lot, haven't you?
Yeah, we've covered such a lot of ground over time. And the beauty about football is you've got the football itself that we love, but there's so much that attaches itself to the game. We talk about the four corner model type thing where, we've gone down the psychology rabbit hole, we've got emotional intelligence, the tactical stuff. I mean, I'm not even doing it justice. We've had Q&As with some really big coaches and managers. And it's, do you know what's really funny? The one thing that comes out a lot more than I expected it to, and not just from sort of fluffy coaches like come on, let's all do this and the heroes, but actually top level coaches come out with things like being good people. Like there's so many coaches. I remember Per Mertesacker going down that road, and obviously he's an academy manager at Arsenal. He's done everything in the professional game, won a World Cup. And he's talking about kids being good people and instilling good values in people like that, being a role model. All those things that are probably present on coaching courses, but are maybe a bit of lip service.
Yeah.
I think the conduct and behaviour of grown-ups at football games is depressing sometimes. And I feel like we could all be better. It's kind of a bit of a flag I'm carrying the last couple of years and say, is this really necessary? The way we conduct ourselves on the sideline. And I say we because we all have our moments. There's no way you would go to a swimming gala and run up and down the side of the pool shouting at the kids swimming. There's just no way. Or sit outside their math lesson and shout at them for getting an answer wrong in a quiz paper or something like that. So I think that if we could all, you know, be a little bit more rational, considerate, I don't know, just be better people around the game, because it's not getting any better. It feels like there's a lot of stuff going on to call out respect campaigns and talk about values of being good people and all that, but it doesn't seem to be getting any better. Referees are leaving, you know, hand over foot, and if they go, the game goes, you know what I mean? It becomes so difficult and so treacherous to, you know, to get games officiated. Maybe it's not the most high level thing to say, but it's probably true. It's a real blight on the game. So that would be, you know, if I could change one thing culturally about the game, it would be that.
Yeah.
You know, because generally, even if I'm at home watching a game with my family, my wife, who's not particularly interested in football at all, believe it or not, is. But there'll always be a moment where she go, oh, you won't get that in rugby. Like,
yeah.
You know, I give her the side eye kind of thing, like, not now, but it's right. Yeah, so it's been a good question, because the kids look up to it. You know, if you can't aim to develop kids who are composed in the game, kids who want the ball in any situations, the coaches on the side are going to lose their minds if a decision goes wrong, or, you know, someone makes a mistake, if that's jumped all over. Yeah, I think we're actually working against ourselves in a way. So that's, like I say, you talk about that being validated. That's validated across the game, to the very highest levels of the game, for people. And it surprised me how often it came up, actually.
On that rate, given the fact that I don't know what the percentage, I'm going to guess that 90%+ of people playing football are probably playing in the grassroots space. It's probably 99%, but I'm sure it's high 90s. Yeah. And probably the majority of those are being coached by volunteers, potentially just parents, you know, doing the best they can. Do you think it's hard for those coaches to be able to instill values and behaviours and those kind of things in their sessions? Maybe that has the wrong question. Do you think the focus to do it isn't there? Not because they don't want to do it, just because they're probably thinking about where to put the cones down, what to play. And is that, again, something that we need to try and turn around then? Because we do a level one badge, maybe a level two potentially, but is there not enough light shine on that side of it, on the attitude and behaviours and stuff?
Yeah, I mean, like, values is a complicated word, I think, and it kind of... maybe not enough people will kind of grasp it. And sometimes I think I'm not too sure. Your values are how you behave, you know, and we do it with our kids, right? We do it with our kids. We behave a certain way when our kids are in the room, when the kids are out of the room. Or we behave a certain way at a nativity play at Christmas than we do in the pub with our mates. You know, that's life, you know what I mean? So I think if we could talk about values, we could talk about putting them up on the wall and writing them down and all that sort of stuff. But ultimately, how are you behaving? Are you behaving in a way that is appropriate for your audience and the place you are? And I think that the shame of it is we're kind of chasing our tail, is that for a long time, football has been a space where you go two rounds, a space where you go where normal people turn into, you know, what's the right word? I don't know what the right word is.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. It's a different side. Emotional. You
know, yeah, yeah. And we dress it up as being passionate and being this, that, and the other. And I think, you know, I'm far from perfect, and there's no way on that. But I kind of, personally, my way is to remain calm in certain situations, remain calm, remain rational, and hopefully be a good role model in that sense. And people see it, and kids see it. You know what I mean? And they know, you know, you address things across a line, maybe as well, but you've got to be an example for that. Sure. So I think that's a massive one. I don't think it needs a coaching course. I think it needs, the question is, I change my behavior depending on where I am and who I'm with. We all do it. That's what humans do. You know, what should my behavior be like on the side of a football pitch with kids? And if the answer you come up with is aggressive and mouthy and all that, you know, maybe have a look at the question again.
Yeah. Okay, so the two things we've got so far is obviously about making most of the sessions and making sure that they're engaging and there's high ball rolling time and everything else. Second part is about actually understanding the importance of having good values and behaviours in place as much as the football side, which I think are two great messages for coaches to focus on. You might not have a third one, but to nudge you here, I'm going to ask you a question. Is there any topics you've covered that you've kind of found challenging to, I guess, for coaches to either buy into or maybe get the point across?
Yeah, and the thing is, we might have a program with 70 or 80 coaches on it, and this was the kind of the founding thought of the whole CPD was everyone's different, so everyone, like whoever listens to this podcast today, they'll have a light bulb moment around something. Hopefully, anyway, they have a light bulb moment, and it could be the behavior thing, it could be the ball rolling thing, it could be something really innocuous that me and you would have forgotten about, but it'll mean something to someone. So what I actually do with the coaches I work with is say, go for them. They're the important ones. They mean something for a reason. And we talk about light bulbs, we talk about rabbit holes. It's just like, if you latch onto something that you don't understand, you'd like to know more about, or whatever you found interesting, go do it. Go down the rabbit hole and find out about it. Things like that. So that's it then becomes, it's not just one program. It's 80 different programs kind of all working together. A little bit like football is in a sense, where every kid's got a different journey and every player's got a different sort of skill set, and get different things from different sessions and games and so on. So that was a really important part of what I do, rather than, you know, turn on the webinar minute one and you need to make a note and remember everything to minute 45 or whatever it is. Learning doesn't work like that. People don't work like that. So that's probably another decent message as well, is understanding that all players in there are different. They have a complete mishmash of experiences, of personalities, of skills, and all that sort of stuff. And you know, I won't say catering for that, because that kind of feels like I'm giving the coach a massive job on their hands, but understand it, you know, understand this.
And it's not linear, right, Ray? It doesn't go in straight lines. You don't just go to A to B to C to D, do you? You know, sometimes, and I'm probably my big one, of my, well, lots of flaws. My biggest flaws is with coaching. I'll sit now and say learning's not linear, but I would expect my players on Saturday to be better than they were last week, you know? And if one's not, especially my own kid, heaven forbid my own kid has a bad week, you know? And then I've got to remind myself, actually, you preach a good game, Scott, but you've got to remember they can have wobbles for whatever reasons. And, you know, just understanding about education and linear and how people do process information and develop, you know, it's not straight lines, is it?
No, not at all. And we do that because the poster that says get 1% better every day is a lovely poster, and it's nonsense in a sense, because it's the idea, don't get me wrong, the idea is fine, absolutely fine, but it doesn't stand up to scrutiny at all, because A, you can't measure it, and certainly can't measure it with a number, you know, and B, it's going to happen at different times, at different rates. We've all had players with a sudden drop off, and it might be because, just thinking of a conversation I had last night, it might be something at home. Do you know what I mean? Or something that's gone on in school, or any of the baggage they bring with them. It could be a little fallout they've had with one of the teammates or whatever. It could be a million things going on. It might just be growing, you know, because they're dealing with a new body that they're trying to grow into. Performances go up and down, and kids, more so than anything, you'll feel like on a Saturday you've cracked it. What a great performance. You know, that was, you know, that's us now. We've kind of, you know, over the bow of the hill, and we're there. And suddenly the following week you're wondering what has gone on, and that's quite normal, you know. You know, there's a lot of change in kids, and that's what you'd expect. And sometimes you have these moments where they are very high and very low, and just kind of, you keep going, don't you?
Of course. And you mentioned earlier about mentorship then. So, and I believe that's, you do offer mentorship to coaches that come on some of your sessions, though. Is that how you follow up with and support them? Is that right?
Yeah, I've kind of got a few layers of things going on, and the one-to-one stuff I don't do a lot of anymore, just literally time-wise. So I've got two one-to-one mentors at the moment. Where we basically get on a call once a week, and we flesh out whatever needs to be fleshed out. from what they do, and they're quite long term ones actually. I've done some sort of small group stuff as well. So a bunch of foundation phase coaches, and we get in a room and we flesh out whatever needs fleshing out there too. Probably what I do most of is the kind of the program stuff. So it's individual, like we spoke about a minute ago, because you make it individual yourself, so to speak.
Yeah.
But there's loads of crossover then, because we tend to get, I don't know, anywhere between 50 and 80 coaches on a given program. The webinars are kind of our way of getting in a room. I guess they're the showpiece kind of parts, but behind the scenes, they'll have a task, they'll have some one-to-one buddying or mentoring to do themselves. We have a group where we can thrash it out, whatever it is that came up, or share whatever. And we always have a book that we put on the table. Just like I said earlier, not everyone's an avid reader, but it's a conversation starter, in that respect as well. We had Cody Royal, works with professional coaches in the main across sports, and he wrote the tough stuff as his was one of his main books. And someone made a comment that there's some ridiculous amount, like 15,000 different books on leadership or something like that published every year. Something crazy.
Yeah.
And it's sort of like, well, they're either all saying the same thing, or they're all saying the same thing slightly differently, and then there's the really good different ones that you come across. So how do you navigate that, and really get a hold of it? So sometimes it's good where experts like Cody will come in and sort of cut through all the noise, so to speak, and do that. And we get a lot of guests that over the last couple of years, and trying to evolve the program's important, just to keep it fresh. And during COVID, everyone was sort of on Zoom, camera off, camera on, on mic and asking questions, all that sort of stuff. Whereas now everyone's kind of settled into, oh, this is Zoom, well, camera off, and I'm listening, and I'll turn off. But the thing was, we wanted the learning to continue even when you logged off. So I needed to back that up with some processes to help that happen. And we've had coaches travel from that program, travel globally to meet each other and do stuff together, which is really, really cool. And beyond
that, networking is so powerful, isn't it? I mean, that's one of the biggest parts of, I think, when what missed out when COVID first came along, and they stopped all the sessions, which is understandable, but it took a while for technology to come to step in a little bit. And then actually the networking and the linking up and the socializing part was a big part of doing the courses, wasn't it? You'd kind of meet people and spend time with them.
Yeah, for sure. And I guess it's just doing it in a different way. It allows, obviously, I spent time in Africa, spent time in Asia. I've got a decent following in the States, and even in South America, we've had coaches come on from. So it allows everyone access, which is a big part of it. I'm actually doing a, I don't know if you've seen it, Scott, I'm doing a coach development day for African coaches in a couple of weeks. And we've had 20-something coaches from Africa sponsored, just by people, most of them I don't even know on Twitter, have just gone, yeah,
awesome.
I'll pay £50 for that. For a guy in difficult circumstances to go access something like that, and that's really cool. And
that's superb. Yeah, I didn't know that, Ray. That's fantastic. Yeah,
that's the internet, though, isn't it? That's the best of it, that's something that's still available. Whoever follows me on Twitter, if you want to sort of go down that rabbit hole, and the proceeds go to the African Coaches League. I spent time out there where resources are slim, and education's probably even slimmer.
Yeah.
But there's a real thirst for it as well. So that's, that's something on the radar. I'm also doing a book club. Making the Ball Roll was, I kind of sat up one day and said, it was a Facebook thing my wife had. And it was kind of like Making the Ball Roll when it was conceived, so to speak. Like when it kind of became, okay, this might have some legs here. And it was 10 years ago. So we're off the back of that. We're going to do a book club. Again, Zoom based, where we'll go through, in Making the Ball Roll, every chapter is a different topic, I guess, and it's pretty holistic. So we're kind of kind of going to go through it topic by topic and pick it apart and answer questions and read the book and all that sort of stuff. So that's been on the cards probably for a while. But that's coming around in a couple of weeks as well, actually. As well as all the other rolling stuff, just to keep everyone nice and busy, right?
Yeah, well, we'll make sure. No wonder your wife hates football. It takes it away from you too much. We'll put all the links in show notes that we can, so people want to find the information, your Twitter handle, obviously, and other bits and pieces, whatever I can put in there, I'll put in there to make it easy, because there's some great work there. I guess my last question, that's all right to you, around this would be, if coaches want to develop themselves and they want to keep learning, and we know how important it is to keep learning, however long you've been doing it for, you want to keep improving yourself and developing, and football's always changing. What would be some of your top tips for that? Obviously, looking out for your stuff. I'll bring that back for you straight away. Yeah. No doubt about that. And we can talk about it, definitely. But, just generally speaking, how do you keep yourself fresh? Maybe, and how do you keep yourself fresh?
Yeah, I think everyone's different. There'll be people who'll be an avid listener of your podcast because of their routine, because of their drive to work or they're taking a dog for a walk or whatever it is, maybe around their daily lives it suits them. Other people will pick up a book, or other people will spend 5 minutes through Twitter. It's kind of, I suppose I would say, embrace what works for you and not what everyone else is doing. So if your next door neighbor is reading a book a week on coaching, it can tell you everything, but that doesn't work for you, then leave it. Use a platform that suits you. If the best advice I could probably give is that if something piques your interest, follow it. Go with that, because your motivation's in there already. It's there's a light bulb there for a reason. And that's probably what I do, I guess.
Other topics, Ray? Do you sometimes go off outside of football? Will you look at other things that may be either educational focused or psychology focused or different sport focused?
Yeah, you said them all there. Those three would probably be the list. When I lived in Bangladesh, Friday was obviously the Muslim holiday and very, very little happened. We had our own book club where we literally read stuff during the week and we would choose maybe something random, and it could be about some stuff you mentioned, or we had, he chose something about something like corporate. I can't remember the name of the book actually, but it was like almost about corporate businesses and why some succeeded and failed and all that. Suddenly you found yourself being able to make things relevant to what you were doing and stuff like that. So, the balls, bibs and cones part, it's like I said at the start, it's glued together by so much other stuff. And if, like I say, find the thing that piques your interest and go with it. So if you're watching, even if you're watching Pep Guardiola going, what is he doing with that fullback? Why is he suddenly a midfielder? You know what I mean? That's your moment, isn't it? That's your moment to go, well, actually, do you know what? You take your phone out of your pocket and you Google it, and you probably, I'm not saying you get to Guardiola levels, but suddenly you just start to tick over a little bit more and gain a bit of a better understanding as it goes on, and almost follow your nose. Yeah. I don't think, you spoke about being linear earlier, I don't think you can be linear with it either, because it'll just take you, it'll meander you everywhere. That's the way I do it, at least. And
part of the fun, right? That makes it interesting.
You could end up anywhere.
Yeah. Ray, thank you so much. I know we're pressed for time, so I could speak to you for like another hour and a half at least about all the stuff done overseas and everything.
No one will be listening, mate, after that.
You'll be surprised. Thanks so much. Just a last question, really. Your plans moving forward, books, CPDs, you got a lot on?
Yeah, so short term, obviously the Making the Ball Roll book club, that's on the horizon to start in March. Obviously the Africa Coach Development Day is on my horizon as well. I have a book brewing, but I just can't get to it. It's probably been brewing for a couple of years, but it's just something that I can't, just can't get into the flow of with all the short-term noise, unfortunately, but that'll give birth at some point, I'm sure. Professionally then, it's, like I said, I'm home. For the first time in a long time, home and settled, as well as working, so it's really good. So it allows you to, I always think in football, you should think long-term anyway. A friend of mine used to always say, no matter how long you'll be there, kind of imagine you'll be there in 50 years. And and work that way. But it's actually probably going to come to life here as well. So, lots of stuff going on.
You're not bored.
No. And the best place to, if I got bored in football, I'd be in trouble because I'm not sure. I've done a few other things in my time, but I'm not really sure what I could do day to day.
Brilliant.
Which is maybe not a good thing, but there we are.
No, it's a good thing. It's a good thing. Thanks, Ray. Look, and if people want to find out more about you or the work, the webinars, what is Twitter the best way?
Twitter's the best way. Yeah, I don't have a website. Twitter is always, there's a captive audience, so it's probably a rabbit hole I should go down, but it's never quite got. I never felt the need. Follow me on Twitter. I tend to update pretty regularly on the stuff that's going on, put it on the people's noses time and again. Generally we do have some good stuff going on.
Top man. Ray, thank you so much. It's really, really appreciated. Great to catch up again. Look, and hopefully if you're up for this, maybe within the next year or so, up there, touch base a bit sooner and just see how things are going. Would that be all right?
Let's not make it 3 years, definitely.
Yeah, 100%. All right. So, cool. Thanks so much. Very much cheers, appreciated.
Gosh. No, by the way, thank you very much.
This episode was brought to you in association with our friends at Soccer Coach Weekly. Established since 2006, Soccer Coach Weekly is a leading source of inspiration and advice for all grassroots coaches. Join thousands of youth soccer coaches just like you, saving time and effort in their goal of having the most effective, enjoyable and successful coaching journey for them and their players. Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed the episode.